to episode 32 of Kyperion Podcast, and I am in a very luxurious studio office here at Church of the Redeemer here in Monroe, Louisiana, with my friend Jared Ritchie. And Jared, you and I have been doing podcasts for almost over a decade now, beginning the old days with Trinity Talk Radio, which was a fun venture. Now we're here at Kyperion Commentary, and we're here together at the Jubilate Deo Music Camp, hosted by Church of the Redeemer, and I'm teaching Bible to the seniors. And Jared, tell me a little bit something about this camp, which I think would be just a wonderful encouragement to for folks to come and just give them a little synopsis.
Yeah, thanks, Yuri. Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, we've been behind microphones over the last decade or so.
That's right.
In various locations, sometimes over over the phones, microphones separating us as very few. I guess this is one of the few times we've actually been in the same room.
That's right.
But yeah, the music camp this week is kind of an anomaly of sorts. We like to think it's what VBS should be instead of the Christian Church, you know, maybe not as an outreach in, you know, plan of salvation, but in worship and singing and warfare and training young singers, training them skillfully. So we bring in a man who's done this camp for over 10 years. His name's Dr. David Erb. He's the fellow of music at New St. Andrews College. And so he's done that camp up there, and I said 5 years ago I wanted him to come down here and do it. And so we tweaked it and made it our own. But yeah, we call it Jubilate Deo, Rejoice in the Lord, you know, which is the first lines of most settings of Psalm 117 in Latin. And it's really something our church puts on with our classical school, Geneva Academy, here in Northeast Louisiana. And it's been a lot of fun, you know, to be able to grow. But the kids are singing, they have Bible, and you're gracious to come and work with them so that you study the text that they're singing. But it's a whole themed concert. They have a folk dance or a ball the Friday night, as you well know. And it's just an effort to saturate them in music in a joyful experience, in something that's edifying and fun and profitable. It's boot camp without the connotations of boot camp.
Right. You know, you get the dancing, the art, and the music, and you get the theology behind all these things.
All woven together. That's right. Yeah, I'm glad you said that about the art. But yes, the art aspect is the art that dovetails with the theme. This year, the theme is the heavens declare the glory of God. And so the music on the concert will have everything from, you know, Debussy's Clair de Lune, solo piano by a professional pianist in the area, to Mozart. It's Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, the 12 variations that everyone knows and loves, the Ave Dire Je Mama. Also, you'll have the kids that will be singing a setting of Danforth's Psalm 8 with Hebrew and English, with, you know, string quartet. And then the big culminating, the heavens are telling the glory of God from Haydn's Creation at the end of the concert. You have timpani, strings, organ, piano. I mean, it's not cheesy, it's not highfalutin, but it's trying to pursue excellence in music and cultivate a love for music by doing it, you know.
And it's amazing. This is my second year here, but you see in the first day where the children and the teenagers have these eyes of skepticism, like, what's happening here? And the music seems rather foreign on Monday morning, but by Saturday when the concert comes, is just this glorious fulfillment of all the hard work they put throughout the week. Has been just a real great joy to watch this unfold. Jared, you have been in the task of, as an apologist for ecclesiastical music, education, music in the school for a long time, and you've been very busy these last 2 weeks. You just returned from the ACCS conference in Texas this a couple weeks ago, and you focus on music education, musical literacy, and you give a talk at ACCS focusing on this specific topic. Tell me what you talked about.
Yes, the talk was All for Music, Music for All.
Oh, yeah.
How to cultivate a school-wide joyful music literacy program, and kind of what we've done at Geneva Academy here in Monroe and now in West Monroe as we're moving across the river. But yeah, it was talking to educators, board members, folks that either have music programs or choir programs in other classical schools and ACCS schools across the country. And, you know, my own brand of weird, special brand of weird, where I just get up there and try to sell a vision, try to recover something. I think we live in such a musical desert that you give kids a little bit of singing in a choir or music class or a good piano or a private instrument teacher, and it's like dropping water on their tongue You know, I'm reminded of Star Wars. You know, what was it? The Force Awakens, where Finn comes, you know, after being in the desert, and he sees that big pool of whatever that liquid was, you know, and he just dives straight in, you know, and that stuff was disgusting. But he was so parched that he went for it. It's kind of like that, if we can return to that in the school. So I don't have the corner on the market of how to do it, other than I'm a decade in with my sleeves rolled up. And I want to see us return to music literacy. It's the church's need and desire, and the schools that have been given that task from local churches need to recover it. And so I'm just doing what I can to help.
Well, you've been a great voice in this respect. You've been encouraging me many times throughout the years. But, you know, music is usually seen as a way of filling in space and filling in time, but not as something that's essential to the DNA of the worship experience here. So let's think about that a little bit more. Talk about music in the church, some of your efforts in recovering singing and musical literacy in our church communities. For many of us who grew up in this broad evangelical tradition, music was, as I said, a way to fill in before you got to the main event, which was the rhetorical experience where you heard a minister preach. Talk about your efforts in recovering music as a fulfillment of that vision in the Bible, of the people of God singing as a way of expressing their adoration, but also as forming their humanity as image bearers.
That's right. I mean, you can't miss, if you look anywhere with any purpose in the scriptures, the command to sing, the imperative to sing,
right,
and to shout, which is often, depending on how you parse out the grammar there in the Bible texts, is also a version of singing. It's a joyful singing. It's a more robust singing. And even depending on who you ask, within Zephaniah, the Lord sings over us, and some would say he sings creation into existence, and we read Aslan singing Narnia into existence in Lewis's Narnia series, and we read of Tolkien. So the historical understanding of singing being something that is part of the triune God. It's something he does first and we carry forth. He breathes into us the spirit language. The inspiration is a breath and a singing connection that moderns don't like to make. And so, yeah, singing is something that shouldn't be foreign. It's not garnish, as you said. It's something that, whether in education or at churches, it's just kind of dressing up what we think is the substance, you know?
Jared, why has music, church, in the church, ecclesiastical music, music in general, what's happened to music that has taken such a secondary or tertiary place in the life of the church?
Well, a lot of, there's you could answer this a lot of different ways, but for the sake of time, one of the chief things, or one of the chief temptations that moderns have, is the focus of individualism in worship has really, in my estimation, hurt music, because music has often, in history, was a servant's craft. You did for others. You worshiped for others. You sang for others. But when you shift through history, through after the Enlightenment and really in the since Romanticism and in the revivalism, where it's all about me in the service, how I feel, how I do, and there's an experiential overemphasis, that doesn't help things. But also, if you think the Bible is the Word of God, the preached Word, and you disconnect the singing aspect, the Trinitarian nature of theology, and the beauty of something being connected to the truth of something, as some of the ancients would say, if you disconnect that, then you think, oh, music is just, you know, something to the side. We've really been Gnostic in a way, and even in the classical world, you know, dipping backwards in our discussion, we've really done a lot of good work in the Reformed world on truth and goodness. But you always hear the mantra of truth, goodness, and beauty, truth, goodness, and beauty in the classical world and in the Reformed world too, by extension, I would guess. But if you see that we've spent a lot of times on having the theology right and the being good and right in what we say and how we say it and being defenders of the faith, but we haven't put time in what is good and beautiful, what is true and persuasive. And we know that we need to do this, because we know the people who are the smartest in the world, who are the least graceful, who are the most curt and rude, and we don't take them seriously.
Right.
You know, we need to see that again, that music and the idea of the art and beauty, I think it's a stage of maturity that we need to recover.
So parents and pastors and musicians in the church who have done a very poor job of inculcating these ideas that you're explaining there, they're thinking right now as they're listening to us, I haven't done any of this here. Is it too late? What kind of words of encouragement do you give these parents?
Right. Yeah, that's a question that I almost could, you know, just close my eyes and just answer. I get right. that question so many times. And the first thing I say is give thanks where you're at, but don't be settled and content to stay there. Mm. Be content where the Lord has put you. Give thanks that it's not any worse than it is. And ask him to put people in your path, whether it's folks that can come in and train and excite your folks, skilled musicians. I think we forget that there are people who give their life and their callings, or they've been called to teach and to train, to shepherd musically. And we think, well, anybody that's got a Fender Stratocaster, we'll give that guy a guitar, and we'll then scratch our heads when our people can't sing.
Right.
You know. But what I would say to parents is have your kids in such a way that whether you give them lessons, have them singing in a choir, that you're in a church that values singing from the pew. Choirs are great, but you got to have, I love David Erb's, people's militia. You know, if worship is warfare, if singing is part of that, and it has been, even if we don't know it has been, the modern church may forget that, you need to be in the people's militia. Mm-hmm. And if you're skilled and you've got a little bit more advanced understanding, be in the Navy SEALs, as it were.
Right.
But what I would say to parents is have your children or your kids do music. Don't just be settled just to know about it. Mm-hmm. Don't just be settled to give them fine arts and music appreciation.
You don't want just a history of music.
Right. Any more than you just want to know about the history of plants in a meal. You want to taste it. You want to go and eat it. Do that first, because that's how learning happens. And I guess my last thing I would say is, in regards to encouragement for parents, is understand that whatever you do with your children, try to teach them and put them in areas, in classes, in music camps, in private lessons, in choirs, in Sunday schools and things, in church services, that values the idea of doing. Mm-hmm. You do, you hear, then you do, and then you understand. And if you understand with language, that's you hear your name thousands of times before you say it, before you see it written down on paper, before you write it. Hmm. And I want musically literate generation, you know. And that doesn't mean I have got to teach them all the hymns of the church mm-hmm. to teach them how to read music any more than I have to teach them the King James Bible mm-hmm. to get them to read.
Right.
But I do all of that for the opposite. Hmm. So I teach them how to read the Bible. I teach them how to read so they can ultimately know the Word of God. I teach them how to sing so that they can sing the Word of God right. in the Psalter and in the songs of the church, and be able to worship at least for one day a week. They can participate in the heavenly choir.
So, Jared, I'm sure there are parents in our congregations who have absolutely zero inclination towards musical education.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to our listeners here about the kinds of benefits you have seen in these homes over the years as you have taught music.
Right. What you see first and foremost is in a day and age where music is everywhere and we're all receptacles of music,
yeah.
we all have an iPhone or a Spotify playlist, or we have the ability to hear the best music that has ever been digitally recorded, less and less people can make it for themselves. They can right. take part in that wonderful recreation of music making, mm-hmm. being like God, singing. And what we found in teaching kids to sing and going through using a methodology that I've adopted and we've used here, which is the Kodály methodology. It was a Hungarian guy in the late 1800s, early 1900s, who was a composer, and he just said, you know what, use the songs of the people, joyfully get every student to sing, and understand that music education begins 9 months before the birth of the mother.
Mm.
And he really was on to something, and it was brought over to the United States in secular circles, but we're trying to see it adopted in churches and schools by, like I said, having singing. I mean, our Sunday school program in our church now starts with morning singing, and we may do a little solfege and a little bit of singing through the hymns that might be that morning, so that those little ones, 5, 7, 8 years old, have the equipment to be able to sing a little bit more with accessibility. The other thing we're doing is we're seeing that the more the kids sing, it's like a sport. Mm-hmm. They sing in children's choir. Their voices sing in high ways that they would never sing, just humming around the house. We're stretching their voices. We're getting them to breathe. And we're giving them music literacy between the ears so that I find kids will go to the piano and figure out how to play something. Or they will figure out the song Rain, Rain, Go Away, how to sing that and play it with heart and soul on the piano. Yeah. You know, they do a musical discovery. They learn in that way. And it's clunky. It's frustrating. I don't mean to make it all peaches and it's roses and it's happy. But what I'm seeing is a joyful fruit. And what you can testify, Yuri, for our listeners, that as we record this, the halls of this cavernous church are filled with children ages 5 through, you know, 17, 18, singing in the hallway, singing in Latin and English and hymns and other choir songs and games and folk dancing and all that. So it's been very, very refreshing.
Yeah, it's a part of their DNA. It's right. A part of their meals. They sing together. They pray together by singing, and it becomes a community effort. And when the community embraces this vision, it just becomes an essence. It becomes a part of who they are. Jared, I'm really thrilled about this camp, and I'm really hoping that people will get a better sense through this interview of the kinds of things we're offering here. But not only that, but perhaps parents and pastors will get a vision, even if a small one to begin with, of the important significance of singing together as God's people. Jared, Richie, thank you for your time, and I hope this goes far beyond this office here, and I hope people get a good grasp of what's being taught and that we might be able to love music together as a people. Thank you, Jared.
Thank you.
For more information and anything you've heard here, let me encourage you to visit jubilatedeo.org. That's JUBILATEDEO.org. And we'll make sure we give you that information on the podcast. Or you can also purchase Jared Ritchie's book, Bach to the Future. And it'll be a wonderful introduction if you're willing to explore more of this issue here. Again, thank you for your time, and we'll see you next time.